I remember Yang Zhao saying this quote in a conference I was attending, and it always resonated with me. He said, reading and writing should be the floor, not the ceiling. And that always really connected with me because my focus on innovation over the past several years is really kind of looking at doing new and better things, but it's not disregarding the basics. And I'll be honest with you, it is very important for me to be explicit how important the basics are. When someone says to me, hey, we don't need times tables, we don't need spelling tests, I'm like, yeah, we still need those things. Those are things that I think are really important. And it's not negating our kids actually having a deep understanding, but understanding there's certain things that we need to learn and understand. If you say to me, kids don't need spelling tests because we've got spell check, my first response is, well, you got to kind of be in the vicinity of the word. You can't just slap the keys and hope for the best. So it's not the basics or innovation. It's actually going further. It's actually having some really important skills and actually developing it so we can go further than what we could when we were kids. The same is true with research. The idea that it's either innovation or research, there's only one that we can actually focus on, is not always true. You can look at some of the best practices that have been done over time and really kind of have an understanding of that. But if you say to me, hey, this works for 90% of students, my first question will be, well, what are you doing for that 10%? And so sometimes we can research best practices, what really works with many of our students, but it's not going to work with all of them. That's where the innovation comes in, is how do we actually iterate? How do we take what we know and modify it based on where we're at, who we serve, and really thinking about those connections in our community? Talking about all this, I was reminded of this when I was talking to Frank McKay, and I'm actually speaking at a conference coming up in June. It's called the 2024 Early College Summit, and they were talking about innovating for student success. And it's not about negating the basics, not about negating research, but really how do we get to that next level, focusing on those things, but actually innovating to understand who we serve and how we can best help them and honestly ourselves. So we kind of talked about the conference, why it was such a focus, you know, for what we're doing, what's that tie between research and innovation. I'm really excited about speaking at this conference. It was great to talk to Frank. You can actually see the link below if you're interested in going to this conference. I would love to see you. It's actually in Durham, North Carolina. I know a lot of people from North Carolina listen to this podcast. Maybe Michael Jordan. Maybe. I doubt it. But anyways, if you know Michael Jordan in North Carolina, just let me know. I'm a big fan. But anyways, I'm so excited to speak at this conference. It was great to talk to Frank, and you'll learn a lot about the notion of early college, research, innovation, the connection to that. Great podcast episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Innovators Mindset Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Innovators Mindset Podcast. I am so blessed to have Frank McKay with RTI International. And he is actually, he brought me in to speak at the 2024 Early College Summit that is happening June 4th and June 5th, 2024. I'm looking at the site, right? I got that all right.
That's right.
Yeah. And so Frank, actually, we were talking, he has done so many different teaching jobs. And now he's working with RTI. So before I kind of get into that, we talk about the event, kind of what some of the mission, some of the stuff that you're actually doing. And the theme I absolutely love is innovating for student success. And I'm going to ask you what that means to you, because I think that's a really important concept, because I think a lot of times in education, people hear the term innovation and they just think it's, hey, we're going to get kids to use technology and then everything will be fixed. And that's not how I think you or I see that. But like, what does innovating for student success mean to you? What does that look like? How do we make that happen? So if you can just kind of tell everyone who you are, what you do today, how you got there, I think it's a great place to start.
Sure, absolutely. And yeah, thanks for the invitation to be on the podcast. Love your work. We'll talk about
how we connect. I hope so, because I'm coming there. So hopefully
you don't hate it. Yeah, we're ready. So I have been working at RTI International for the last, I guess, 7-8 years. And RTI International is a big, large research nonprofit. We do research in everything from healthcare to education, international development. And I work in K-12 education in the U.S. I should say K-13 education, because right, we're working with early college high schools. And with RTI, the mission of RTI is to turn research into practice. And we really focus on using social sciences and sciences to do that. I work in the Center for Education Services, which is a unique center at RTI, where the way I like to say it is we help schools, districts, state agencies innovate. They're constantly working on solving really challenging, complex problems in education, and we bring our expertise as past teachers, principals, superintendents, and the research to help think about, like, think outside the box in terms of how can we tackle these problems in a different way collaboratively as partners. And I can share more about my background, but that's where I am currently.
Yeah, because I know you've been in the classroom, you've taught, you know, literally all over the world, which I find really fascinating. The one question I thought about, as soon as you talked about, you know, RTI, some of the work, and then you tie it to innovation, there's almost this kind of force pushing against each other that everything, you know, when you talk about research, a lot of people think about like totally focused on best practice. And then innovation is almost somewhat, people actually think it's opposite of that. And where do you kind of see the intersection of like research, kind of, you know, seeing, you know, what's being done and kind of learning from that process, but innovation, that idea of like doing new and better things. So where do you see that kind of intersection of those two things? Because I think a lot, there's a lot of camps out there that they believe it's one or the other, that we always need to base everything on best practice. Everything has to be research based. And then there's the other side of it where it's all about doing the new stuff. And I'm not a fan of that. I think there's always that middle space, I think, is the most powerful. So where do you kind of see that in the work that you're actually doing?
It's a great question. And it's a great question because over the years, I love to think about innovation. And honestly, I've run into a lot of people who think innovation's either a bad word or just almost like it's meaningless, because they're like, well, what does innovation mean? And I actually love Tim Brown from IDEO. He's written a number of books about, you know, human-centered design thinking. And so, you know, really a thought leader in innovation. And he defines innovation as a good idea well implemented. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, that's it. Like, that's such a great way to define it, because innovation doesn't have to be new. It just has to mean you're bringing new thinking to a challenging problem or an interesting problem, and you're bringing a new way of thinking about it,
right,
and you're doing the hard work to figure out how to do it well. And so I think of innovation in terms of, like, there's a lot of good innovation research, and doing good research, we know it takes a while to get it done, to get it published, but we can learn a lot from that. And I also like to think about the intersection of bringing research as well as our experience, because we learn a lot from experience. Oh. And we can bring those factors to think about innovation in that way of just bringing good ideas that work.
Yeah, and this is actually, like, really, to be honest with you, this is really one of the reasons I actually do this with, you know, conferences, school districts that I'm speaking into. It's kind of like a meeting that we're having to kind of talk about, you know, where you're at, what's your organization about, and then for me to kind of think about, like, how I'm tying in, you know, some of my messaging, some of the work that I'm doing, because I know I'm very cognizant of this idea that it shouldn't be research innovation. Like, one of the things that always I've always challenged is that people think that when we talk innovation, that we're saying we're foregoing the basics, that kids, you know, don't worry about reading and writing because AI will do that for you, right? Spell check, all this other stuff. And I'm like a huge advocate of times tables. I'm a huge advocate of spelling tests. I think those are really important. And the joke I always make is that, you know, people will say, like, hey, we got spell checks, so kids don't really need to know this. I'm like, you kind of got to be in the vicinity of the word. Like, you got to be somewhat close. And so I think when you're talking about that notion of research and innovation, kind of as you said, there are sometimes where, and I talked about this in Innovator's Mindset, it's invention. It's something totally new that we've never done before, but it has to be better than what was done prior. It can't just be new. Or there's iteration. And there's like, hey, so we've looked at this practice, and it's, we've seen that, you know, the research tells us this work, but our community is a little bit different than the ones that maybe they're kind of getting their research based on. So what are the iterations and how do we make this our own? And, you know, a lot of my work is really kind of focusing on not telling people what they should do, but just kind of giving them ideas. And then hopefully they understand that they actually create the solutions. And I think that's something that is really important to me. What is like, I know that you, the conference is the early college summit. For people who are not listening, you kind of mentioned this briefly. Like, what is early college and how is it connected to K-13 education? And what is that, you know, what opportunities does that maybe give kids that they haven't had when I was a kid in school?
Absolutely. It's such a great question. And the first thing I'll say is that there's kind of a core idea of what early college is and what the early college model is, but there's actually a number of different ways that it's implemented. So you'll hear in some states thinking about early college, and they're really talking about a program that's within a larger traditional comprehensive high school that's providing, you know, kind of college pathways that may include a fifth year of high school where the kids are taking more, students are taking more college classes in high school. In North Carolina, where I'm based, and RTI actually facilitates a network, we call it the Early College Network within North Carolina. And in North Carolina, early colleges are actually standalone high schools that are typically on the campus of a four-year or a two-year college partner. And the whole idea of an early college high school is that students are taking, they're enrolling in a high school where they have pathways to take college classes while in high school and typically earn an associate's degree and earn a full 2 years of college credit while in high school. And there are a lot of dual enrollment programs now where more kids are taking, more students are taking more college classes in high school. And so a differentiator with early college high schools are typically that there are these pathways that lead to robust and extensive college credits and degrees and other certifications. I'll say one other thing that's pretty common to the definition of early college high schools is increasing access, especially for first generation college students and students who are typically and have been traditionally underrepresented in higher education. And so for the last 20 years, early college high schools have been really expanding that access. And the research, and actually some research out of RTI and the Serve Center at UNC Greensboro, and among others, has been showing that it does make a difference for those students.
Well, it's interesting that you said, because like, I don't believe college is the only way to success. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that that's the focus, but you're ensuring, but I always think that it's important that we have that door open, especially for, you know, students who might not have the ability that, you know, maybe we had, like, I remember my student loan when I came out and I'm like, I hated it so much. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like, it was so much better than some of the student loans right now. Right. Like it's really, really bad. And, as you know, myself, I'm a first generation, university college graduate. My parents had a grade six education and grade two education between my mom and dad. And they came to North America because they saw education as, you know, a way to a better life, and that they didn't have the same access that they would for themselves and for their kids coming over. So I love kind of that mission of, you know, what you're doing. And, you know, that's something I'll be talking about quite a bit in my own experience, because I think we kind of neglect that, you know, many of our families came over to North America to kind of open those doors for us. And then, you know, sometimes we kind of take it for granted. And I know my parents are really proud of, you know, that I was able to expand education, because they knew it would open doors that they didn't necessarily have. One of the sessions that I'm going to be talking about, and you can ask me about this too, but I know you said you wanted to mention it. And by the way, if you're like listening to this, can anyone sign up for this conference, by the way? Like, you can go, like, is it limited to just North Carolina, or is it anybody?
No, that's a great question. Over the last couple of years, we've had a lot more interest as early college programs have been expanding to other states. There's been more funding. So a lot of people are saying, well, who's been doing this longer than the folks in our backyard? And since North Carolina was one of the early adopters of early colleges, we've got over 134 early colleges in North Carolina. So yes, it's open. We're getting more interest. And so last year, I think we had 9 or 10 different states represented at the summit. So definitely open to folks from other states. And, you know, I know you'll have this time stamped, but registration is open till May 3rd. So reach out if you're interested and have questions. I'll also say that the next question is typically who should come. And it's tends to be a practitioners summit. So we get lots of principals and teachers, but we also do a lot of, because student supports are a really important part of early colleges in the early college implementation, we get a lot of school counselors and then other staff who are kind of in a role that in North Carolina we call the college liaison, who's the staff member who really serves as a bridge between the high school and the college partner. In other states, there are other people in that role has different titles, but we get a lot of interest from those folks as well as district administrators.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say this because I was actually, we're recording this on April 23rd. I was just in Commack, New York, in Long Island, and they're not like an early college district. But that being said, they're bringing in college level courses, and you're seeing, you know, people are seeing the impact of that, giving kids opportunities. Because I think part of it too is that opportunity starts to kind of get kids to, you know, kind of figure out what they want to do. Whereas I find traditional high school maybe confuse kids more than anything, right? Like you're not really able to explore things that maybe you want to, you're excited about, because you just got to tick the boxes to get your graduation requirements. So I'm seeing more and more schools, and I'm going to actually link to below to the podcast I did with the superintendent there, Jordan, who's absolutely amazing, who was talking about that, because there's a lot of, you know, synergy between what you're sharing, what he was sharing. So one of the sessions I'm talking about there is the idea of like moving from digital citizenship to digital leadership. And I think this is really something I'm very passionate about. I've been talking about it for years. So tell me a little bit about, you know, your thoughts and, you know, kind of what your hopes are for that session and what you're hoping to achieve with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're excited about the keynote you're going to share. And we're also excited that you're going to be able to do a breakout session for us. And when we were kind of talking about what those options were, that one stood out to me because we talk about digital literacy so much, which is so important. But this idea of helping students shift from just thinking about, oh, what's digital literacy? How do I engage responsibly? Right. To really thinking about, oh, what's digital leadership? Like, how do I use these tools to actually think about how I can be a digital leader and use the tools that in front of, you know, that are continuing to evolve and emerge. So, yeah, we're excited to have that offered at the summit.
You know, so as you're talking about this, one of the things I've really tried to train my mind to think about is, you know, even talking about in education, and it's really important, is literacy, right? Like literacy and, you know, kind of we're thinking about that from the concept of reading and writing, even though we know there's much more to literacy than reading and writing. But we kind of stop there, right? Like that's the focus. And so one of the things that I always talk about is like kind of moving from literacy to fluency and what the difference is. So, you know, even kind of thinking about when I took French, you know, in, you know, a high school in Canada, there's a certain element of like, we did what we had to do to get our grades, but we never really focused on the notion of fluency and what would that have looked like and how do you get people to that point? And so when you're talking about that move from digital citizenship to digital leadership, I feel we spend a lot of time telling our kids, you know, just kind of how to exist online, you know, don't share your passwords, little simple things like that, which I think is important, obviously, but it's actually, how are we going to that next level where they're like, hey, here's like an opportunity to kind of leverage some of these tools to, you know, create opportunities. I know from personal experience, I have become way smarter over the years because I've learned to connect with people like yourself, you know, through podcasts, through my blog, people commenting, like a lot of my work that I, you know, a lot of stuff I've written about is changed thinking because of people commenting on blogs saying, hey, have you thought about this? I'm like, I actually didn't. So I'm glad that you said something because now, you know, I'm going to kind of reshift kind of how I think. And, you know, I wouldn't have the opportunities I have in the world today if I didn't start using this in meaningful ways. And I'm curious your thoughts on this because there's a struggle. And I have this struggle too, that, you know, people don't want kids on phones, they don't want devices and all this other stuff. And I get it. And there is one superintendent I was listening to, and it was really fascinating. They said, you know, we got rid of mobile devices in our school and there's no cyberbullying anymore in our school. I'm like, yeah, okay, there's no cyberbullying during school hours. It's very different than there's no cyberbullying, because if you don't teach kids how to use this stuff, and I think that's something I always struggle with, because I don't know if all the adults really, you know, leverage this or think about it in a positive way. Because I'm sure there's going to be some pushback to, you know, some of those ideas, like, well, kids shouldn't be using these devices and stuff like that. I'm like, if you don't teach them, then when they do have access, that's when they're going to make mistakes, because, you know, they're kids. Give me a phone when I was 15 years old and, you know, wish for the best, and that's not happening, right? If you didn't give me any guidance. So what are your thoughts on that? Because I know there's going to be some challenge to that, and I think it's good, because we got to kind of find that space of, you know, we want kids to be, it's super easy to get distracted. Those are all issues, but if you don't teach our kids, then what happens when they have access?
It's a great question. And I, you know, technology is going to continue to evolve and in new and different ways. And so it's that kind of, like, you think about innovation, like what are the timeless skills that we need to teach? And to me, it really comes back to, you know, the fundamentals of teaching kids about good relationships, modeling good relationships. And I think about it in terms of what we saw when COVID hit. I don't know about you, but what we saw and what I saw in the schools that we were working with are the schools that had built strong relationships between teachers and students and had done a lot of collaboration in the classroom between students. So there were kind of, I call it the three dimensions of relationships, adult-student, adult-adult, and student-to-students. Schools that had built that culture didn't, I mean, it wasn't that, there was a rough transition to blended and online learning, but they did it well and they had those relationships. So moving into the digital world full time worked because they had taught and cultivated that culture. And so I think now that we're, you know, where we are, that there's this kind of to take some lessons learned from that. So if we teach kids those fundamental skills of you know, relationship building and critical thinking and awareness, you know, all those things that translate, those are the fundamentals that they'll take both in face-to-face relationships as well as online.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I'm sure someone's thinking like, oh, you know, that wasn't, you know, no, it wasn't easy. And I'm like, I, you know, it definitely wasn't easy, but if you didn't have those relationships, it was impossible. I think that that's a really important aspect. It's funny because Katie Martin and I are working on something, talking about like artificial intelligence, and we say emerging technologies, and we talk about what are the timeless principles. So for example, curiosity will always serve you well. You know, focusing on attaining knowledge to develop wisdom, because I think in schools, there's a lot of like, hey, we want kids to, you know, understand these or to memorize these facts, memorize these things. But there's a difference between like memorization and deep understanding. And so are we actually focusing on kids and our students and ourselves to actually get that? And whether it's AI, whatever technologies are coming your way, those are really important skills and something that we have to continuously develop. And as long as you kind of focus that, whatever comes your way, I think you'll be fine. So last thing I'll ask you as you go, you know, the registration's still open, and, you know, I feel really blessed to come here because a lot of the thinking that's happening, you know, with RTI, with the summit, what do you think would be, like, how would this be like a successful event to you? When, and, you know, I feel some onus on this because, you know, I'm going to be there speaking. So like, if this, like, you know, that we knocked out of the park, what does that look like to you?
So my broader role at RTI is the leader, director of our peer learning networks. And so the Early College Network is one of those networks that we facilitate. And when I think about big convenings like this, a lot of times it's a lot of inspiration, but maybe it falls short on a couple other things. And I like to think about kind of a three-pronged kind of successful big convening where people come away really empowered to make a difference. And it's inspiration, education, and celebration. So I really hope that we come away feeling inspired by your words. Yeah. I hope we come away educated, having learned something from you, and also that we've created space for everyone to learn from each other. And then just to celebrate, I mean, people are doing, and these educators are doing such hard work right now, such
Oh.
important work. And so to be able to celebrate that at, you know, this comes at the end of the typical school year. So it's a moment to step out and say, you know what, we've made it through another year. We've
Right.
graduated another round of students, and it's just a moment to celebrate. So.
Yeah, and I think, that's something that that's my focus every time. So I'm like really excited. I'm like, okay, that's what I try to do. Because the idea of we want people to be challenged. We, kind of talking about education so that they grow, but also feel affirmed, right? And Dwight Carter and I always talk about this. We talk about this notion of finding the balance of a warm bath and a cold shower, right? The warm bath, you feel really good, like you feel appreciated. The cold shower is like, oh, we got to pick it up a little bit. And sometimes if you have too much of one or the other, this doesn't really kind of help long term. So I love it. I'm really excited to join you all. I'm gonna like maybe snip that last part out just so I make sure that I have this as a reminder. But everyone, if you're listening, you can actually see where to sign up. I would love to see you there. I know Frank would love to see you there. I know tons of people in North Carolina listen to this podcast, so it will be a short, drive for you based on North Carolina standards is what a short drive is, but it is obviously open to anybody. So, Franks, thanks so much for being on the podcast, and I look forward to seeing you real soon in person.
Yeah, we're looking forward to a great event. We're also right by RDU Airport, so it's easy to fly into as well.
Love it.
So, which is good for you too, George.
I love it. I love it. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Thanks, Frank.